Hello everyone. It's been a while since I did a purely theoretical video because we're in a kind of news-rich environment at the moment. But after watching Matt Goodwin's dismal, frankly embarrassing performance on Pete McCormack's show, in which, honestly, it's one of the worst performances I've ever seen. I think Goodwin is one of the worst, if not the worst, political figures I have ever seen. He's dislikable. He's hostile. He comes across as actively disliking the public. And he's just inherently untrustworthy. But after watching that, I started thinking, like, well, why is it that the right is so unprincipled? Why doesn't it ever get anywhere? Why does it, the right wingers continually fall for it again? Why are they so gullible? Why don't they seem to have any decent ideas? And it prompted me to make this video, which is not going to specifically look at Goodwin, but I, through my usual elite theory lens, I'm going to explain why I think it is that we have this predicament of the right never really getting anywhere. Just before I get going, I will remind people to pick up courses at the Academic Agency, Trivium, the bestseller there, Foundations of Shakespeare, out now, the book and the course. If you buy the course, you'll get 50% off the book. And I should mention, speaking of books, that this book that I wrote a couple of years ago, The Prophets of Doom, I found out yesterday, because I was always kind of like, oh, well, populist illusion is the one everybody talks about. I was kind of quite proud of this book, Prophets of Doom. But, you know, it felt like fewer people bought it, fewer people talked about it. But I found out yesterday that actually this book has sold over 10,000 copies, making it a very hot-selling book indeed. Both, like, just in general, anybody would be happy with 10,000 copies sold. So I want to see Prophets of Doom have its day in the sun, as it were. So I thought I'd mention it again in light of that recent news. Anyway, let me get going now with why I think it is that the right never seems to get anywhere. Now, in recent weeks, I've talked about how in elections, in terms of elections, the right has an advantage. Does not need to triangulate to the center, because of various advantages that it has, drawing on the work of Jonathan Haidt and various other people, David Goodhart. You know, this is a well-known literature, YouGov polling, I think, and the electoral performances of Donald Trump and various other people. This notion that the right needs to tack to the center and play Tony Blair is something I disagree with. Fundamentally disagree with Matt Goodwin on that. I disagree with many other people, Ben Shapiro, and many other kind of M25 type wonk, you know, Tory boy types on this. That inherited wisdom, that received wisdom, is just wrong, flat out wrong, and is not the way that an insurgent right-wing party can win elections, or a populist party can win elections, an anti-establishment party can win elections. It has to win elections by turning out the non-voter and by appealing to things that people already believe. Goodwin's idea of the median voter or the average voter, I think, is wrong. And possibly coloured by the fact that he was campaigning in a particularly left-wing area up in Gorton and Denton as well, where he ran, of course, the worst campaign anybody has ever seen in a dismal, embarrassing and Alan Partridge-like performance. But the section of the interview that I thought was really bad from him, there were so many bad moments. When they got to the notion of the Iran war and Trump betraying his base, Goodwin got extremely defensive, and he basically defended the idea of the, you know, of the Iran war, and said, well, look, it's a different case from Iraq and Afghanistan and so on. And he basically, like, came up with some bullshit to justify what has happened. And made me think, well, what is it that Matt Goodwin stands for? Why is he such a frustrating, annoying, establishment figure that everybody correctly hates. And people do hate his guts, by the way. They hate his guts because he is standing in the place where a patriot should be. Matt Goodwin is not a patriot. He's a swindler and a charlatan, okay? But he's standing in the place. He's occupying space where somebody else should be. That's why people don't like him. But what is it that he stands for? And how is it that our conservatives, again and again, find themselves, conservatives like Matt Goodwin, Tory boys like Matt Goodwin, find themselves defending the establishment, even though they're ostensibly running as anti-establishment? And I think it boils down to this. Now, I've mentioned variations on this in the past, but it seems to me that whereas so in elections, the right have advantages, but when it comes to theory and when it comes to visions of the future and, broadly speaking, shared goals, collective goals, the left have the advantage. So, and we see this again and again. You know, in my lifetime, the Tory party has been in power for most of the time. You know, it was Thatcher, then Major, an interruption for New Labour, then 14 years of Tory hurt, and now we've got Starmer in, another little brief Labour interlude. During that time, the Conservatives were in power, but the culture and everything shifted left. Cthulhu swims left, as Yarvin is wont to say. How is it and why is it that happens and continues to happen? What, if anything, can be done to stop this, I guess, is the point of this video. And my view, which I've developed over some years now, is that most ideology, in fact, all ideology, is a post hoc justification for what power does. Okay, and you can see it very directly now as various magatards and people like Goodwin, okay, develop post hoc justifications for a rash decision by Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, and then they stumble over themselves to come up with some ideology, you know, even nonsensical ones like peace through strength. I mean, it's not peace through strength, is it? Think about it even for a second, Foundations of Logic fans. It's war through war. Definitionally, right? The law of non-contradiction. War is the opposite of peace. So if you make a war of choice, that is literally the opposite of peace. If you take America from being in the state of peace to being into the state of war, you are not establishing peace through strength. You are establishing war through war and also absolute chaos. In the Middle East and indeed for international energy markets as we speak. Okay, so the notion that this is actually, that really this is what MAGA was about all along, really this is what America First is about, really this is what peace through strength is about, okay, really this is art of the deal or whatever else, in the MAGA case, it's extremely naked, this post hoc justification, basically scrambling about to try to explain the actions of a retard, Trump, and a psychopath in Netanyahu. Now, we may debate why Matt Goodwin has such fealty to the state of Israel, okay, which he does. But I will give you a different explanation from the usual ones. You could say, well, he's taken money or he's corrupt or something like this. I actually just think it's a conservative or a right-wing disposition, psychological disposition to the current status quo and to the current power structure. These people sniff the wind. That's Goodwin sniffing the wind. He sniffs out where power is, and then he, like a weasel, aligns himself with the power, aligns himself with where he thinks the power is. And this is most right-wingers at most times in most places, okay? If right-wing thought is typically a justification for a particular power structure, often one that has unequal outcomes, okay? Often one where one group is at top at the expense of everybody else, and then it comes up with justifications for why that group should be in charge. In Matt Goodwin's case, his entire show with Pete McCormack was a justification for why the Israel-loving neoliberal center should remain in charge in the form of Nigel Farage and former Tories sitting in the Reform Party. Every single one of those people, Suella Braverman, Robert Jendrick, Richard Tice, Nigel Farage, are shills for that little country in the Middle East, and they are shills for a particular power structure that has grown up since 1945 in this country. And you may say they are the vanguard for that ruling class, and that Matt Goodwin, unsuccessfully, embarrassingly, cringe-inducingly, tried to sell that to Pete McCormack over the course of 1 hour. That Matt Goodwin is an apologist for the current ruling class. Okay? Now, in the case of Goodwin, it is very, very clear and obvious to see. But I did a little exercise. I went through all of the right-wing thinkers I could think of and then thought about, well, what is the power structure that they are defending? Now, in lots of cases, it's really obvious. Okay, with Joseph de Maistre, he is defending the ancien regime and throne and altar, Catholic-backed French monarchy. Okay, whether it's the House of Bourbon or some other mythical French king, that's what de Maistre was defending, that institution. Many Catholic thinkers, okay, through history, are defending the institution of the church itself and the church in Rome, the Catholic Church in Rome. That is a particular institution. Arnold Toynbee called it the temporal institution. Okay, and he always argued, Toynbee does in, I don't have it here, but, well, you can read about it in Prophets of Doom, okay, in his massive book, Study of History. He argues that when people, you know, the birth of the conservative, who stands in defense of the temporal institution, that is the beginning of the death cycle of a civilization. That the birth of the conservative it is a sign of something on the downward swing. Okay, because it is, I mean, think about it. You have a little territory that you're trying to defend. Unfortunately, my daughter nicked my bloody pen, so I don't have a pen here to draw you just have to imagine it. You've got a territory, you're trying to defend it. Okay, rather than expanding outwards, or rather than forging new ground conceptually, or, you know, in terms of ideas or whatever else, instead, the conservative is trying to cling on to something that already exists, or in many cases, something that's already died. Or they're trying to get back to something that's already gone.
I think Spengler talks along these lines as well. If you're simply just trying to cling on to something, over time, your enemies are just going to start taking over it, okay? Because you're fighting a rear guard action, okay? If you're reacting, you're losing. And the right winger typically is always reacting because their posture is defensive. Okay, their posture is typically defensive. And this is, this is basically the reactive populist slop party of Nigel Farage, who've made that entire brand of reacting to an equally slop left, fighting yesterday's culture war battles, okay, and defending the establishment on those things that actually matter, like, for example, British fealty to the American Empire, or, the supremacy of Zionist doctrine within British politics, which is what Matt Goodwin actually stands for in the final analysis. These details are the only thing that matters when it comes to Matt Goodwin, in much the same way that in the final analysis, when you think about Joseph de Maistre, what does he stand for? He stands for throne and altar. But it really, this is a problem, because every thinker that you pick up, because of their particularism, because of their lack of an actual unifying doctrine is always defending something that either exists only at this moment, right now. For example, I mean, it's a transient thing, if you think about it, right? So Goodwin's defense of this structure that exists right now, okay, this power structure that exists right now, is transient. It's obviously on its way out. He's obviously clinging on to a horse. I mean, you don't have to see too much. That ship has already sailed, mate. 20 years down the line, it will look like ancient history. And Pete McCormack, in a way, was trying to tell him that. You know, you'd be like, look, 10 years down the line, you'll be telling me this war was a disaster, just like the Iraq War, right? You understand what I'm saying, okay? But also, I think this whole thing, this whole power structure that we're talking about, is clearly on its way out. I'm seeing it up and down my timeline. The Democrats are already talking about dumping AIPAC. That was a political article this morning. It's on its way out. It's an ex-para. It's gone. But of course, the Tory boy, the forever right-winger, always clings on at the moment where it's already a lost cause. So in a way, it's a white pill, because this structure that Goodwin's clinging on to is already a lost cause. Okay, he doesn't believe it's a lost cause. He thinks he can save it. He can't save it. Nobody can. He's up against the forces of history. Nothing he can do about it. I want to get back to the basic problem, though. How do we find someone who has a positive vision for the future, has a way of circumnavigating this problem that the right has with defending particular and often unjust institutions or unjust power structures? See, the left have a very cogent critique of what is happening at the moment. They say America is a global empire. I say that as well, of course. But the left, right, they go further than simply identifying the empire, as I have done. They say it's a global American empire. There is an imperialist project. And this imperialist project, in order to maintain itself, must destroy any pockets of potential growth outside itself. That's why it hammers. That's why it starts wars with Russia. That's why it's paranoid about China and constantly sees China as an enemy. And that is why they had to start this war on Iran, because ultimately it's an imperialist project. And the resistance to that project, represented by the BRICS nations and the quote-unquote global south, okay, is a kind of struggle, a struggle against imperial oppression. Now, you can disagree with that analysis, but it is quite a kind of clear and cleansing moral frame. Whereas the right has nothing to go to for that, because most of the people on the right cling on to defending unjust institutions, or, you know, they've got a vision of something they like. Maybe it's the old British Empire, for example, okay? But the British Empire's come, been, and gone. We can't get back to the values of the British Empire. It's come, been, and gone, okay? But yet, when we pick up books, you know, Major General Richard Hilton, forever, he is defending a particular set of institutions at a particular time with all of their injustices and all of their inequalities. This basically puts the right on a path where you're either like Goodwin, defending something that's slipping out of your hands because the ship has already sailed, or you're defending something that's already a lost cause. Okay, I mean, and you can hide out in these lost causes. So, for example, if you're a De Maistre guy, okay, you could say, well, I'm a kind of Catholic monarchist in the throne and altar mode of Joseph de Maistre. The trouble is, the French Revolution happened, and we were just nowhere near having the restoration of the old monarchy. That order has come, been, and gone. So in order to try to get back there, you have to engage in a lot of headcanon fantasy. It's basically just not going to happen. And in the end, what it is just a safety zone. It's a safety zone to hide out in order to kind of critique the modern world. Now you could say, well, what about Julius Evola? Okay, who's, you know, quite radical and so on and so forth, revolt against the modern world. But if you truly understand what Evola's trying to get back to himself and what he's arguing for, really, he's just going further back. He's just going further back again. You know, maybe it's not, you know, Bourbon restoration. It's something like something like, you know, the Ghibellines against the Guelphs, something like this. Okay, the Holy Roman Emperor against the Pope, or something like that. Okay, you still basically end up with some older configuration. You know, and you know, the reintroduction of caste system and so on and so forth, which again are interesting things to think about conceptually, to think about in terms of critique of now, but it's not very good in terms of having something that you're trying to get to, having a vision that you're trying to get to. I wonder if this, I mean, I have in the past talked about the importance of a negative vision, i.e. to be against current establishment, to be against the current order. A lot of people said that you need a positive vision too. One of the problems I had with that is that nobody can agree on what that positive vision should be. Okay. And that's because the right is coming from all sorts of different places. Okay. And it includes everybody from libertarians to Matt Goodwin types to people who read the De Maistre and Schmitt and Evola and so on and so forth. These are people who basically don't agree on much. And I said, well, the one thing that you can agree on or stay focused on is just being against this current order. Okay, just stay focused on that. You can't go wrong with being against the current elites, because that will then show you friend and enemy. Right? For example, it reveals that Matt Goodwin ultimately is an enemy, right? Because he's defending the current power structure now in a very vocal and mask-off way. Okay, I would argue that is exposed people like Chris Rufo in recent years as well, that these people are not actually radicals. They are actually people who are trying to save the current order as it stands, not bring it down. Whereas, of course, on the left, they don't have these problems so much. Okay, they may do in the center, right? They may do the closer you get to the middle of the Labour Party, where there's a parallel containment engine. But at the further out you get, and you know, these dangerous forces that Goodwin talks about in the Green Party, okay, they're not constrained by any of these problems. They have moral clarity. Now you may disagree with it, you may call it woke, you may say they're delusional, you may say their ideas will crash the economy. Probably they will. But the fact is they have a moral compass, they have a guiding star, because they know where they're trying to get to. Where that simply does not exist on our side of things. Because it does not exist on our side of things, I would argue that essentially the gravitational pull always goes back to the left, because there are enough, regressive forces within the right, pure reaction, Tory boyism, I guess, Goodwin types. There's enough people like that that will ensure that the right always ends up landing on the quote-unquote wrong side of history, and that the left then get to own the moral clarity of doing the right thing, because they're defending principles, they're defending, dare I say, values, right? And the right is defending particular things. And those particular things are often rotten. It could be Donald Trump that you're defending. Well, Donald Trump is rotten. Donald Trump is a traitor. Donald Trump has let you down. But some people want to cling on to that. Or they're trying to cling on to, I don't know, the institution of Parliament. Or they're trying to hold on to, a particular patronage network that exists around M25 Tory circles, which is, you know, often it's as small and as limited as that. Or they have, you know, they're driven by, let's say the current Israeli government. Okay, these things cannot be defended really on any logical grounds or on any grounds of principle or argument, because you have to keep on changing them on the fly, because they are, by their very nature, post hoc justifications. And I see this as an asymmetry, and I see it ultimately as the reason why, quote unquote, Cthulhu swims left. You know, it's an issue. It really is an issue. And I don't know if it can be solved. I don't know if it can be solved, because people on the right struggle to point to a situation and say, well, that's wrong. That what's happening there is wrong. And we're just going to be opposed to that because we don't like to see it. We don't like to see that, you know, that's like a moral stance. It struggles to take such a stance like as that for various different reasons. So I don't know how to get out. I don't know if there's a way out of that. One of the things I see at the moment is Tucker Carlson trying to use the universalist Christian frame as a means of battling some of these forces that we're talking about, and some of these problems, the problems of particularism, for example, okay, lacking a guiding star. But I don't know, it remains to be seen as to whether Tucker Carlson will be able to be successful using that kind of universalist frame against entrenched special interests, which is ultimately what he's up against. And the problem is that so many people on the right struggle not to fall in some respect for an entrenched special interest. They actually have no universal frame in the final analysis. You're defending something particular, something concrete, right? Something real. But because the world is always in a state of change, because there's always, you can never kind of freeze time. Okay, it's never a static snapshot. It's always moving, okay, the real world. You're always got this problem of you're trying to hold, it's like you're trying to hold on to goo or something, and it's coming through your fingers and escaping again. How do you deal with that? And what tends to manifest is gullibility. Fell for it again awards, and people simply supporting unprincipled power structures in a manner that just becomes more obvious and corrupt over time. My worry is that this basically gives over the moral frame to the left over and over and over again, so that when they say, well, we're on the right side of history, we're the good guys, by the way, and you guys are always the bad guys, it often starts to ring true, because they can always point to people who fell into that. And this is one of the reasons why more and more, and, you know, when I went on Pete McCormack, I said this, that we need to try to break through left and right dichotomies. We try to at least, like, speak, cross the aisle in some way, in a kind of new space that's not quite left and not quite right. Because I, frankly speaking, as time goes on, I struggle to see the push against the establishment ever truly coming from the right, owing to these problems and owing to the kind of various traps people have to fall into, okay, to play nice with power. Whereas I think that the left often has been able to be more fearless in these sorts of areas. And again, there are particular reasons for that. We can have a debate about, you know, true left and, you know, fake opposition type left as well. There is all of that. You can go and watch my chats with Caleb Morpin and others about this topic. But I do think that it's continually going to be a struggle to truly be quote unquote anti-establishment, especially when we're up against this establishment in Britain or indeed in America, and to do it from a kind of strictly speaking right wing point of view. There needs to be a kind of a, I don't know, like a new thing takes from everywhere. I've been doing my little bit when it comes to that. So yeah, let me know your thoughts. It was kind of a bit of a ramble for me today, but I just wanted to kind of get this out there and collect ideas. And if there's some good ones, maybe I'll make a follow-up. All right, pick up a course, everybody. Trivium, Foundations of Shakespeare, and I'll see you all soon.
If you like this video, be sure to like and subscribe. You can join the channel for thousands of hours of past shows in the archive and hundreds of videos. If you have any questions, you can leave a super chat or a super thanks, and I'll be sure to pick it up during my weekly office hours, which run every Tuesday afternoon. I also provide courses at the academic agency, which I encourage people to buy. Thousands of students now have taken the Trivium to improve their skills in writing, logic, and rhetoric. Just three of many courses available. Buy it now. But most importantly of all, friends, get out.